Okay. Good morning, everybody. It's March 24th, 2020, I believe. Yes, it is. And it's 10 a.m., and I'm calling to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. We are originating from the Administration Building in the Story County Public Administration Building with public access being provided via conference call. And a special note to the public, due to the recommendations to limit gatherings to no more than 10 people in order to help slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus, public access will be provided to listen in on this meeting, and that's shown on the agenda, excuse me. So we will now say the Pledge of Allegiance. Please join us to kick off.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we are operating, as I said, with some changes to normally how we do things, and those we have accommodations. Because we cannot hold the meetings with more than allowing public access right now. So the guidance we have, we are allowing the, under code 21.8.1, we can have an electronic meeting, which is what we're doing. We also today, we did have a 24-hour notice of this meeting, but I would say that we are allowed to have a meeting if we have a necessity of such on less than a 24-hour notice. And the reason I'm simply bringing that up is we may have some agenda items that we did not get the actual documents put on our website in advance, 24 hours in advance. Code of Iowa Open Meetings Law does not mandate that we do that. However, that is our normal practice. So we may be looking at things that somebody who is listening in the public or even staff may not have had an opportunity to look at the entire document, and we'll read whatever it is that is not on our agenda. So first thing we have is adoption of the agenda. Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Agenda is adopted. Next, we have updates on COVID-19, and I would just say, are there any that are urgent to be made right now? And the reason I say that is we have a lengthy agenda and things we have to do, so it's just for ones that are urgent and maybe relate to the meeting agenda we have. Are there any that staff would like to make first?
All mine is part of your meeting. I'm Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager. I did provide a written report for the board, so I'll be glad to answer any questions. It's very simple.
Okay. Any questions for Leanne?
I'm sorry. So is this the...
Yes.
Okay. So so you submitted the daily status report, just some information about the CCMQ meeting, which will be tomorrow, but then we all close. All right, and also what some plan changes you have in present plans in the work for CCMP that will come before us. Okay, I just thought I'd read them given that they weren't on the agenda or weren't as the attachments.
Thank you for doing that. Any other questions?
No.
Thank you for the report. Appreciate that. Any other quick updates that we need to have before we move into item 7? Okay. Item 7 is discussion and consideration of items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. And Noelle McClatchy is here to talk about one, which is discussion and consideration of revised temporary employment practices and policies in response to the COVID-19. And I would say, just for the record, that this is a proposed revision of something that we adopted last Friday, and that's how quickly things are going. So thank you, Noelle, and I know that Alyssa Wignall is on by phone. Thank you, Alyssa, for all the quick work that you did on this and whoever else helped. So, Noelle?
Good morning. Just
quickly, as Linda mentioned, this was something that the board discussed and approved on Friday. We have some changes on page 3 that regarding just clarifying the employees that are covered under the paid leave for COVID-19 isolation testing and or recovery. In the most recent copy, which did everyone get that latest copy?
The supervisors did not get posted on the agenda center,
correct.
So you might want to read the addition.
Okay. Temporary employees, interns, will receive a number of hours paid leave equal to the number of hours that such employee works on average over a 2-week period.
Okay.
And then the next page, under the travel, we added the recommendation that was came from the governor recommendation on March 21st. Recently traveled outside of Iowa for the governor's recommendation. And then an exception to this may be made to allow essential staff return to work that can't work remotely without isolation and or if determined that the employee's risk of exposure was minimal, avoided crowds, did not travel by public conveyance, airplanes, bus, etc. This will be determined by the respective department head or elected official. Every effort will be made to isolate the essential employee within the work site.
Okay. So those are the changes that we would like to consider. Are there questions for Noelle or for Alyssa if she's on the phone?
I don't have questions, but I have comments about some changes I think that we need to go in and qualify on this. Okay. While it seems like it was just Friday, that's 3 days though. So for people who traveled and departed prior to March 20th, they're 3 days more into, if they're not showing symptoms, all right, they're closer. So this policy, I would like to make sure that we make a distinction between people who departed prior to March 20th and had no idea of the governor's recommendation and people who may travel going forward, because we know that we want people to try to protect themselves. Okay, and so I'd like to for us to consider that for this, for anyone who has departed as of tomorrow morning, since, you know, we're just discussing it now, that they may not be eligible for the paid leave portion unless they're traveling for an emergency with an immediate family member as defined under family member defined under the bereavement policy. So the difference is here is if somebody decides they want to take a jaunt down to Missouri for next weekend, right, and they go somewhere, you know, it's a little hard to determine whether you've been exposed or not if you stop and eat in a truck stop or something like that, you know, well, you know, maybe, I don't know if Missouri slows them down, but I mean, there's still some risk, but I'm not sure that we want to start giving people the COVID-19 paid leave, if they're leaving and it's not an emergency, a family emergency, if they're leaving the state.
Do you know if we can restrict people that way?
That was what my response to that would be, is I think as an employer, we can't restrict them from personal travel.
Okay.
Can we see prohibit them from using the COVID?
Yeah, prevent them. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're looking at
it.
Can you say that again? Wait a second. Are you still there?
Sorry.
Well, I'm turning the volume off. Yeah. Now, would you repeat that?
Correct. The federal act does not prohibit future travel and that COVID paid leave. So I would not advise putting that in our policy.
So if I might follow up with you then, Alyssa, because we do say in the next paragraph down under which we've, after the bullet points, we say that we trust our employees to not abuse this benefit. Any employee found to violate this trust by abusing this benefit shall be subject to immediate discipline up to and including termination of employment. So if we can't put in some kind of parameter about what we think might be a violation of trust, that does this last clause even make any sense? Right? I mean,
yeah, that's if they falsely give information to utilize the COVID leave. So say they didn't travel, but they said they did. That's why that provision is in there.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
I think you can ask, Linda, I think you can ask employees that are not traveling on indigenous codes. Yeah.
Okay. And I appreciate that because we did have one person who manages other people who weighed in concerned about the possibility of some employees maybe thinking about using this in a way that we hadn't perceived of. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I don't have other questions. I just appreciate the detail to attention and this ever-evolving. As we said, we just did this on Friday, and then we're here before the table again. It's just a sign of the times, unfortunately, at this particular time.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further comments, either Noel or Alyssa? Okay. Then I would entertain a motion to revise the temporary employment practices and policies in response to the novel coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic, as presented.
So moved.
I would like to offer a friendly amendment that we add in the paragraph below a sentence that says we encourage employees to not travel during this period for their health and the health of others. So Melissa said we could add that. Do you accept that as a friendly amendment or not?
Yes. I just want to, so Alyssa, was that clear that you could do something like that?
You're not mandating anything. You could put a sentence in there that we, you know, the governor is not recommending any travel either. I mean, but there's no mandate out there yet, so you could put that sentence in there. We still can't keep them from traveling.
Sure, I understand that. And I would not have thought about it if we had not been contacted by that particular manager.
I have just one other question. If we put that in there, does that potentially set up where we'd have to come back and revise should the governor mandate?
We wouldn't want to be inconsistent with the governor's
right,
policy.
Right.
So leaving it out now would save us.
That's what I'm kind of wondering on it. I'm not opposed to what you're saying, but I'm just wondering, does that then present another situation of
I'll second in without my amendment.
So you're withdrawing your amendment?
I'm withdrawing my amendment and offering a second as is.
Good point.
Okay.
Is there further discussion? Not all. Hedden?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Policy is approved. Thank you very much for all your hard work on it. Next, we have discussion and consideration of communication strategies in response to COVID-19. Sandra King and Leanne Harder. And if maybe, I'm going to ask you if you'd be willing to.
You can't hear from that mic over there.
That microphone.
That's the people on the phone.
You can turn this one on here if you wouldn't mind. Or not here if you need to.
Yeah, that's one thing that we have found here, that's where we put the table here, is you can't hear from the other.
Okay, Leanne and Sandra, take it away.
Sorry. I did provide for the board summary of both existing communication strategies that we've been working on, as well as some proposed for consideration by the board based on last Friday's discussion. just so that for the benefit of those listening, I'll just go through it, and then if you want to just proceed, they ask me questions, or Sandra, as we go forward, if that's okay. I'll start with the first one is following the initial. We've done several initial press releases that have been distributed. There were ones from the board, on 3/12/2020, and that was Story County Preparedness for COVID-19. And then following that one, one from the county treasurer on a process regarding property taxes. And these are ones that I distributed. Both the sheriff's office as well as the county auditor distributed individual ones. I did not list those, but those are on our website. On 3/17/20, I did send a press release closing the building and notification on closing building closings. And then following that, the treasurer's office sent one as well. So those have been completed. And the way I laid this out is the strategy, then the status, and then any budget implications. And that obviously is staff time. The next item is an email notice that I've sent to all city halls asking them to post the building closure poster we have somewhere on their building if it's available, like for access from the public, or in a newsletter that they're sending out digitally, however. So that's been completed. Again, that was just staff time. We did place that same poster on all of our county buildings. That was staff time, and then the GIS coordinator printed the posters internally. And I do want to thank Kyle Bestie from Information Technology. He worked with me to complete some website updates. So we have a new page just for COVID-19. A link is on our front page with a green box that directs people. You click there, you go to that new page and subsequent pages. So that's done, but it's ongoing at the same time. We'll continue to update it as necessary and provide modifications. We've had social media postings, everything, building closings, property tax updates, animal control updates. Those are ongoing. Darla Ingham with the board's office is helping to maintain kind of following, tracking social media as well. So that is staff time. Internal communications with staff via emails, county newsletter will hopefully go out later this week. That'll be ongoing and staff time from budget implications. We have the formal process for public information requests. Again, an ongoing status and staff time required for that. Civic Plus has released some COVID-19. So Civic Plus is the vendor for our website. They've released some COVID-19 tools and like special buttons and just a whole basically toolkit for local jurisdictions that are Civic Plus subscribers. I've been going through that trying to see what we can use possibly. They're allowing 90-day free subscriptions for different services, so I'm, as I've had time, going through that, but we do have the ability through Notify Me to send out subscriptions too. So that's ongoing in staff time. I want to be cognizant that right now it's a 90-day free trial, but we don't have to commit something beyond that as well. Email, I just sent an email to the City of Nevada, since the County Administration Building and Justice Center is located in Nevada. There's a scrolling public bullet sign, what am I trying to say? Identification sign at City Hall and Gates Hall, both in town, asking if we could have our message that our buildings are closed there. I'm still waiting to hear back from the city.
Could you go back up to public information request formal? What is that?
Just the formal process for public information requests.
So a formal process for the law is I call up and I ask for a piece of paper, or I call up and ask for some information. So
it's public records, open records.
Yeah.
Open records. Okay, I lumped them together, which is why. Okay.
Yeah, open records.
Thank you.
Good clarification. Now we're going into items that could, page two, could be implemented by the board if directed. Possibility of distributing press releases on both meetings Tuesday, and if there's a special meeting on Friday on here's what happened, if there's information to send out. Again, that would just be staff time.
The board did ask that we look at paid advertising in the Ames Tribune, Story City Herald, Nevada Journal, and Tri-County Times, as well as the Sun. So for $3,000, we can run in all those publications beginning this Friday, March 27th. I did, page three is a potential calendar of the dates of those, the piece would appear in those publications. The ad size would be about 5 inches by 10 inches, wide by tall. So I asked for a total for two times in each publication. The Herald, the Tri-County Times, and the Journal are each weekly publications. The Tribune, as you well know, is daily, except for Mondays. The total for those two times in each publication at one time per publication, 2 weeks one time per publication would be $1,590. And then the five additional runs for the Tribune is another $1,000 plus. So for the paper appearance, it'd be $2,715. Then I do want to note we would not meet this Wednesday's Herald or Sun or even this Thursday's Tribune. The deadline would, if we got even in this afternoon, the earliest would be the Tribune on Friday. I did ask, though, for how we do with an online presence with the Tribune as well, and there's an additional cost for two times in each publication, plus five times in Tribune, and 7 days online in the marketplace. It's another $285 for 35,000 impressions on the website, time for 20 to 30 days if wanted, so that takes the total potential budget to $3,000. Are there any questions on that one?
Yes. Let's back up to the run frequencies. I like the two times for each of the weekly publications. Okay. I mean, so it'd be 2 weeks in a row on that, right? And then the five additional runs in the Tribune, are you looking at running 5 days in a row?
No. If you look on page three, I have a potential schedule.
Got it. Okay.
We'll just go right there now. Okay, we could get it. So if you look on page three, there's a table. Again, this is tentative, just trying to think of when we'd have the most readership possible. Friday the 27th would be our first day in. That would be the Tribune. And then we would shoot for Sunday in the Tribune again. And then the 31st in the Tribune. The first, next Wednesday, would be the Sun and the Herald. On the 2nd, April 2nd, would be all four. I mean, excuse me, all the Tribune, the Journal, and the Tri-County Times. And then we would wait for that fourth one of the Tribune until the 5th, Sunday the 5th. Mm-hmm. And then you can see it from there.
So, and my question about Thursdays in the Tribune, did they tell you that circulation was bigger than their Wednesdays?
No.
Are the Thursdays when they put out the grocery ads still? I know they're not as robust as they used to be.
No, I think it's still Wednesday.
It's still Wednesday.
So
that tends to be, at least when I was in the business, a bigger.
I just was trying to be consistent when all the legal publications are, so I usually look for Thursday.
So, yeah, but I don't know. You know, maybe they don't have many rack sales anymore, because that was a big deal about why Wednesdays were bigger. Okay, thank you for that. Now my next question here is, so it looks like these are quarter page ads.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Question I have is, how did you come up with the number for five for the Tribune? And would you have to do in the newspaper itself to get online access?
I did not ask if you have to do the newspaper itself to get online access. That's a good, my understanding was we wanted to look at the newspaper first, the print first.
Sure. I can only bring it since you mentioned online.
Yeah.
That's why I just
Think, again, I was on the phone call, but I think you said seven runs in the Tribune, if I remember right. And so that's
right.
Where I came up with the five plus two, the seven for the Tribune.
Right. The weeklies have a longer, what's called kind of shelf life or eyes life, so that people will oftentimes pick up the same edition two times during the week because they may look at some of the information. Now with no sports, I can't tell you how that would be, but that used to be how in the old days that a lot of people treated that as kind of 2 days worth of newspaper. So So, but with the Tribune, I mean, with the dailies, that tends to be, used to be, that you didn't.
Can I ask a question? This is really good in terms of what we can do. What I'm thinking in my mind is why are we doing it and how we're doing it. And I did check the Trib's circulation. Their print circulation is about 5,000.
Yeah.
The digital is 9,900. I don't know if those duplicate because I know I have four. And the Sun is 33,000. So I'm thinking, who are we trying to reach? And I'm also trying to think, what is the content we're talking about putting out and how important is the timeliness of it? I'm just looking at the fact that today we're, you know, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, but I think we need to think about what content, and by the time it gets out with a deadline, are we going to be misleading people? We might be saying we are doing this, and in fact, something has happened, and it's 2 days later, and we're doing that, and we have to try to pull an ad in order not to get out inaccurate information. That's just my overall concern.
I think that's a really good point because things are moving so quickly. It's really hard to stay up on top of what we should be doing from one day to the next. And every time the government, for example, gives a briefing, things have the potential to change.
And I know not everybody uses the website and not everybody uses social media, and they are getting to be the more difficult people. And I think that's why you brought this up, that it's more difficult to get to those people, but there's a lot of people who don't read the paper either.
Right. You know, I read the paper every day, but I don't get the hard copy. I only look at it online.
Right.
And whether all the ads are shown online is the other issue.
The most effective.
No, I was just say, was the goal on this to just because I can't remember from our conversation 4 days ago, I think it was to just say that we're closed to the public, but we're still providing the service.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's right.
So it wasn't, putting out any additional updated information. It was just so people were aware
of that. Don't come to these buildings.
Yeah,
that was the goal.
But, you know, we don't know. This is so rapidly unfolding, and we've just found out that we're often not, we're charting our own course and deciding where we think we're going, but we also have to respond to proclamations and emergency orders that are done at the governor's level or the federal level. And I guess what I mean there is we don't know what we're going to be doing tomorrow, honestly. So we put out an ad that says we're closed, our offices are closed to the public, but all departments are still open to services. They may not be in a couple of days or next week. And I'm seeing deadlines for print media and going, oh my gosh, you know, when can you pull them?
So
we can be putting out inaccurate information.
So the ad now, I think at this point in time to run, is that as of, and you put the date on, okay, this is happening. Or you put, our buildings are closed to the public, please call this phone number or these phone numbers to ascertain if we're still delivering service. Most people do have a phone. Okay, so that addresses your concern about letting those people know who might see it in the newspaper or see it in the Sun, and it's not a time-sensitive message.
That might be exactly what's on our homepage on our website. Or because that's got all the phone numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but, and I think it is important that you date it and say as of when.
Mm-hmm.
But we still might be putting money out there to get information out that is no longer valid. But for updates, if you can go to our website, otherwise call.
Yeah. Do we, the amount or the number of ads, would we need to have it that often? And I know the saying is you need to hear or see something so many times. I'm just looking at just the financial on it. If there was a different ad that we had to put out later, would it be better to say, let's run, you know, instead of two times in the publication, do it once, and instead of five times in the Tribune, maybe twice, or something, so that we're prepared if we need to put up something else has got the money to be able to do that.
So normally a buy, and I'm assuming this is how it works, is we would buy for the two-time runs, but we could, or the seven. I think seven might be a couple too many, all right? But that we don't have to have the copy be the same on each of them, and we can go ahead and say, no, our date, we want to move it out, or we're going to buy one, and we want them all to run the week of March 27th. Okay, and the next one, the next as well, would be to, we'll let you know when we want to run. And Leanne, then you'd be talking to them to find out, you know, when deadlines would be for them. But that would be, that would meet your question.
Yeah, because I would think you'd want, if you're going to do it, you'd want the first run to be
all at one time.
All at one time. And then hello, because you might not want another run for another 2 weeks.
Correct.
Things may come and
correct.
Say, okay, we're not going to. So whether the, and this I don't know because I just don't remember, if the paper would let you do a buy, like a large buy and hold off that far, or some of them have limitations that say, no, you have to do it within this time frame. So you may have to say, nope, we just want to do a first buy and then we'll come back later for a second buy.
Leanne, so were these all quoted at the one, did you basically calculate them on the one-time buy, or did you, yeah, rather than a
yeah.
package buy?
Well,
what,
no, the,
she's talking about is a package buy. And
well,
I
the second goal is the total for each, for all, that is a package, total for two times in each publication. For two
weeks.
And
that's
the add-on is the five additional for the Tribune.
Yeah, because those are expensive.
Let me interrupt just for a second to keep us on track where we have to be. We have a 10-minute at least presentation by Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley, and we have Travis Squire set at 10:45 for a Zoom conference, video conference. I was asked to give an estimate earlier, and I think he was scheduled for 10:30. I said, let's make that 10:45. So I'm thinking, can we give some general direction to Leanne and let her take that and do a plan? She may have to change some stuff. I don't want to just dictate exactly that she's got to come back if she decides one fewer ad or one more ad
right.
or something like that. We quite frankly don't have the time to do that.
So I would make
let her just take the plan and run with it.
So I would make the motion that we authorize for communications in an amount. Not to exceed $4,500. I'm going to cut it back a little bit. Okay. Total $4,500 for both the newspaper and radio advertising. And if you can add online for that $4,500, it's up to you what package you want to put together then. My motion is for up to $4,500 for a newspaper, radio package using these vendors as you can, and delivering any most versatile message, including referral to our website for updated information.
For discussion, just a clarification, was our budget for ad only $33,000, or was it
$3,000? I'm authorizing another $1,500 when they take a look at the KSI spot.
We'll check on the line after it's back in that home. It's about
$2,200 or $22,000,
but that includes all the boards.
Okay.
And legal publications will probably be out because of special meetings.
Okay, so I am then authorizing, we're authorizing some expenditures out of uncommitted budget, is what you're telling me. It could be unbudgeted. Now, we actually
funded available in that.
Right now. And if we need to, it'll be that we'll have to come back and add more in the funds if our legals run higher.
I'm confused. We were talking about $3,000 all the time.
The $3,000 is what for this particular line item, but it was lumped. You're telling me it was lumped.
We were talking about what you were saying last meeting, that there was $3,000, but this is a different line item. mistake than what you were talking about, because there was more in there than
that. Yeah, I was going to say that is the legal publications line item.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused.
If you could get close to that microphone, Lisa.
The legal publications line item is what we're using for the Sun and for all the legal publications that the Board of Supervisors does. Right. And there is 33,000 total budget in there. You're saying there's 22,000 left.
That is last month and before.
Yeah.
Correct. And I think that this year's Sun was less than we budgeted,
which
because we did not do as much. Is that 3,000?
That's the 3,000.
Okay. So the net is 1,500 additional from what you originally budgeted to do that. However, we don't know how much legal publications are going to cost this year. It's always a...
So I'd like to not mix those, even though that $22,000 came up. Let me amend my motion, if I might, to say the three...
Why don't we just say the motion dies for last a second?
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, just so we're clear.
I move that we allocate, we approve for communications to do a plan using roughly these parameters and using these vendors with $3,000 to come from money already budgeted under the Board of Supervisors communication budget and an additional $1,500 unbudgeted from general funds.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'm going to second it. I think we have an important issue of ever-evolving things to put out there. I do have a concern with that additional $1,500. That is my biggest concern, but I also know things are evolving, and if we can use whatever mechanisms to get out to the public to know what's going on.
I also have concerns about going into unbudgeted funds right now, because I think with everything that is going on, we're going to have some other emergency requests to help people out.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that we did talk about some things here that maybe aren't doing all of this right now. I would hope we can come in under $4,500 to get us going. I'll vote now, but I'm concerned about if we can keep it to the $3,000, I personally would appreciate it, because I just don't know what's going to be coming in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's that general direction, allowing staff. Okay.
So you're not amending your motion?
I'm not amending my motion.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. Public comments for the public to address the topics on today's agenda. Are there any public comments, either from anybody who's here personally or anybody who's called in? Which statement?
Statement explaining why meeting in person is impossible or impractical.
I will go back. Thank you. On agenda item 4, we did get past that. Meeting in person is impossible and impractical for code section 21.8.1 because of the fact that we are dealing with COVID-19 pandemic, and we are limiting our in-person audience in this room to no more than 10 people. Thank you. Okay, are we to public hearing items now? And if somebody, and Lisa and Lucy, I see you're working with some things there, but let me talk while you're trying to get ready. In order for people to hear on the conference call, I'm going to either use that mic or somebody stand and use this mic if you would. The ones over there are just too far away from our conference call.
I'm just going to show, and I'm going to
thank you. Okay, so Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley is here, and And item 9, public hearing item, and 9.1 is introduction of elected officials and department heads. How do you want to do we do that formally?
Just announce them.
Okay.
Whoever's on listening in or...
Okay, so in the room we have the three supervisors, we have auditor Lucy Martin, we have no other elected officials or department heads here. Are there any other elected officials or department heads who are on the call? So please unmute yourself and introduce yourself.
Linda, I think Joby is a...
Oh, Joby Grogan is a department head. I apologize. Okay. Who else is on the phone?
Stacy Harridge, county recorder.
Okay, I heard Jerry Moore, planning development, Margaret James, environmental health. Who else?
Sue McCaffrey, animal control director.
Thank you. I heard Mike Cox, conservation. Who was the other person who talked at the same time?
Wayne Strickrath, county assessor.
Thank you, Wayne. Anybody else? Okay. Any other elected officials or department heads?
Elizabeth Wayne, director of internal operations.
Thanks, Melissa. And we also have Sandra King, director of external operations here. So. And we have Ethan Anderson from the county attorney's office. I'll just mention him. And I think that's all for elected officials or somebody representing an elected official. Anybody else?
Connie Torres, I'm for Sheriff of Jones.
Thank you, Connie. Anybody else?
Artie Baldwin, finance deputy from the treasurer's office.
Thanks, Artie. Anybody else?
Todd
Lundball,
risk manager.
Thank you, Todd. Anybody else who wants to? Okay. I'm going to assume that we have everybody introduced. Thank you. That's kind of hard to do on a conference call unless you have a roll call list, and I didn't prepare one, so I apologize for that. So, Lisa Markley, assistant auditor, would you like to present the FY 2021 proposed budget?
I would be happy to.
We'd be happy to hear.
We are having a public hearing today for the FY21 budget that we have worked months and months and months on, which seems like a long time ago. Mm-hmm. The proposal was published in all three official newspapers on 3/12 as required by law. The budget that is adopted today cannot be higher than the published, but can be lowered at this public hearing. It did not bring actual handouts. They have been on the website since 3/12 or before. So people are welcome to either download them or come to our office. We do have some available in there. The handouts do include the projected FY21 salaries of department heads and elected officials. We haven't practiced, so this will be, she'll just have to know what's going on. So I'm going to start with evaluations for the county. The evaluations for Story County did increase. Countywide increased by 3.97%. Rural increased by 9.12%. The rollbacks are shown up here, and they did decrease for residential to 55,074, which means if you have $100,000 assessed value home, then the taxable value for the upcoming year is going to be $55,074. For agricultural property, it increased to 81.48. You guys had a presentation a few weeks ago from the county assessor regarding this situation with the ag, so I'm hoping that any questions were answered at that point. Commercial and industrial is rolled back to 90%. That's been standard for a few years now. That is backfilled by the state at 100% currently.
Should we turn the light on?
Okay. And the multi-residential is rolled back to 71.25. Obviously, the most impact on that is in the city of Ames. They include apartment buildings that were formerly classified as commercial. So an overview of what we went through and how we came up with this budget. We had departmental work sessions in January. Those audios are all on the website if anybody's interested in listening to them. We had the salaries we put into this budget. We have five bargaining units that have 2% in contract with varying pay matrices. We have 2% cost of living for adjustment for non-union. We put health insurance premiums in at 15% increase. And we did put in 3 new positions to fund for the upcoming year. The asset, which is analysis of social services evaluation team, did increase overall by 5% for this upcoming year. There is a capital improvement plan out. I did not change that date. That has not been officially adopted by the board yet, but that's kind of gotten put back. The last review you had was middle of February, it seems like. So I don't have an adoption time on that at this point. Okay. As you know, that includes funding for secondary roads and new equipment. Telk Phase 3 at the ISU Research Park, a lot of trail paving and expansions for part of Iowa Nature Trail and Prairie Rail Trail, for Hickory Grove Sewer Replacement, for HVAC rooftop replacement, and for StoryCon. We also included in this budget funding for urban renewal, small communities, and home-based Iowa in relation to economic development. Senate File 634 required that a new public hearing of taxes from the general and rural funds were being proposed to exceed 2% over the current year. That's taxes, not levy rate. Story County held that public hearing on 3-5, and that resolution 2066 was passed by a 3-0 vote, and it's required to pass by a supermajority. The FY21 budget deadline for counties and cities was extended from 2/31 of 20 in the original Senate File 634, but with COVID-19, that deadline didn't get extended to 4/30. Since we'd already published, it was probably most productive to just go forward and get this going, huh? So the levying funds per the Code of Iowa, countywide means every taxpayer in the county pays this. The general fund is limited to $3.50 per $1,000 of taxable valuation. For the supplemental, in order to access that levy, you must be at the max in the general fund. The supplemental levy is limited to certain mandated services. I've listed those there, like the NIFRS for all employees paid out of the general fund, our insurance for, again, employees paid out of the general fund, emergency management agency, district court costs, chemical dependency treatment, and election costs, excluding regular staff. So the supplemental levy proposal is decreasing from $1.02 last year to $1 this year. County MHDS, the maximum levy is calculated in a totally different manner than any other levy. The rate is capped per region based on population in that region. For our region, per capita is $35.50, which translates to $3,482,728 for Story County. This year, the region recommended $2.5 million from Story County, which in turn is a levy of 50 cents, which is up from 44 cents. For the debt service, we anticipate a new debt this year for secondary roads projects up to $3 million. So we're levying 2 cents. That's down from 16 last year. The rural basic levy is for all residents in the incorporated area. The maximum is $3.95. We are levying $3.24. Tax askings in this proposed budget are higher by $759,630. But overall, the levy rate is lowered by 10 cents for both countywide and rural. This represents our proposed revenues for the upcoming year. We have to budget by service area for revenues and expenditures. The budgeted revenues for Story County, $44.5 million. 64% of that is coming from property taxes. 22% is coming from intergovernmental, which includes road use tax, state replacement taxes, commercial and industrial replacement, state and federal grants. 5% is coming from local options, 6% fees for services, 2% TIF revenue, and 1% interest in rentals. The expenditures for the upcoming year are budgeted at $49.5 million. Of that $49.5 million, 31% is public safety and legal, and it includes the services of the sheriff and the attorney's office. 15% of that budget is classified as administrative. That includes facilities management for all buildings, information technology, the Board of Supervisors, the county liability insurance, and the auditor and treasurer's management services. 15% is for roads and transportation, and that's in the base of the secondary road department. Kind of speaks for itself. 11% are for capital projects, road construction, TIF projects, and CIP projects. 9% is county environment and education, and that funds conservation, animal control, planning and development, IRBM, the county libraries, and urban renewal projects. 7% is for mental health services, which is for local and regional. 6% represents health and social services, environmental health, community services, the VA department, the juvenile court department, the DHS local office, and many of the assets services. 3% of our budget is for bonded debt service payments, and 3% is for governmental services, including the recorder, the auditor election side, and the treasurer motor vehicle side. So when we put this budget together, we talked with each individual department, but now I have to give it to you in the service area. So. this shows the current distribution for the current year. This is FY20 dollars by taxing authority. We will take a look at an individual slide of an individual tax statement and where the dollars go, but this gives you a snapshot of overall the dollars generated by taxing authorities in Story County. The schools, 46% of it. The cities are next at about 25%. The county is about 17%. And then all other authorities are below 5% for taxing authorities. If you compare this to statewide information from Iowa State Association of Counties, I looked at the 2019 financial overview. For statewide, schools levy about 42%, cities about 29%, and counties at 22%. Or a little below average.
Below the average.
Below the average. I would particularly like that slide because everybody thinks that the county
collects all the dollars
that
right.
We use
we
all
get
that
them all.
Money, and we're not only less than a fifth or below the state average.
So when you come in to pay your taxes, this year I use City of Nevada. I try to rotate what I'm going to use, but I'm using City of Nevada and Nevada School District, Nevada Township for my comparison this year. So you have a house assessed at $100,000. Come in to pay your taxes. You live in the City of Nevada. Understanding that at this point in time, the city has not filed their budget, so I don't know what their levy is going to be for next year. And the schools haven't, so I'm using our levy and last year's levies for the City of Nevada. Your taxes would be $2,123. Of that, $926 or 43% would go to the school. The county would get $277 or 13%. The city would get $805 or 38%. In the other category, there is EMAC, the area school, Ag Extension County Assessor and Story County Hospital. That'd be about 4% of your taxes for a total of $79. So if you lived in Nevada Township, Nevada School District, but Nevada Township has its own levy authority, okay? So you wouldn't have city levy is what I'm saying. Your taxes at $1,533 on an assessed value, assessed at $100,000. Here, the total taxes, 60% would go to the school, which is $926. The county would get 30% or $455. the township would get 3%, area school 2%, and the other taxing entities 5%. So when you come pay your taxes, then they have to get distributed to all those entities. That's all I have. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I don't have any questions right now. I appreciate how the visuals that you have provided for us and for the public. I think you're right in that a lot of folks think the money when you pay your taxes that it all goes to the county and the county's just spending it all, not realizing how it is separated out.
And for any members of the public who are listening in who can't see the visuals, they are on our website.
They were included in this agenda, and they are on our website under the Board of Supervisors budget information. So all the individual work sessions are there. This presentation is there. The handout that I gave earlier is there. I have not received any comments and or questions or phone calls.
Okay. So thank you. So that concludes the budget presentation. Let me ask something just to make sure procedurally. This is a public hearing. I'm assuming that the public hearing does not have to be opened until 5 on the agenda procedures that will be followed for the hearing.
Correct. During the 2080 resolution.
Yes, the 2080 resolution is the public hearing portion. So that would be correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that I hadn't missed that. Okay, so I'll wait till we get to item 5 under here. Okay, so next we have consideration of resolution 20.79 as recommended by the Story County Compensation Board setting elected official salaries.
I would so move that 2079
as recommended.
As recommended by the compensation.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
I'd just like to point out that the supervisors voluntarily this year asked for no raise.
And I think, okay, so there's two, there are two resolutions here, Dan.
There are two resolutions. The first one is what you are approving if you a source of motion goes forward, which is the recommended salaries. I put two resolutions in there because I have no idea what action you're going to take. So if you're going to lower it, this is your option. This would be the only way you could do it.
So we would, but the resolution
number is the same.
The resolution number is the same. That's why I was confused, and I thought before we voted, we better make sure which one we're voting on.
The first one.
Yeah, the first one, which shows the 3,300 and a couple of thousand, I don't have it at things,
$3,000
given to all of the other elected officials, but no raise given to the three county supervisors by our request.
That resolution that you were making the motion on.
Right.
Okay.
As recommended by the county.
Yes, and then the other recommends that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Just to make sure for the record, then. Any further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Edmund?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution is adopted. So then, I will.
Wait, did someone say something?
No, I'm reverberating.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I'm hearing myself.
Okay.
So it's a little disconcerting, but I'll back off from the microphone. Maybe it'll be better. Okay. Next, this is a public hearing, so I would open the public hearing, and I will, for somebody who might be listening but doesn't have the agenda in front of them, I will read the procedures that we will follow for the hearing. First, give your name and address. Second, each person that wishes to make a comment will be heard before receiving second comments from those who have already spoken. Third is please keep your comments as brief as possible. So the public hearing is open. I'm going to ask, I don't know if there's very many people, I'm going to ask if anybody has a comment. If we end up having people talk over each other, I will quickly figure out a way to call on people by alphabet or something like that. Okay? So first let's see if we need to do that. Is there anybody who wants to make a comment regarding the proposed FY 2021 budget? And I would ask for brevity. I'll give it another 10 or 15 seconds.
Remind people that to unmute.
And if there's anybody who is on mute and I can't hear you, I'll please unmute and try to speak, and I'll give it another 15 seconds. Hearing nobody with comment, I'll close the public hearing. And we'll move on to discussion and action on the proposed budget. Is a simple motion to adopt the budget what you need?
So I'd like to point out that I believe the way that this is listed with the discussion first and then moving into the action, which would be consideration of either as presented or reduced. I think it's listed that way so that we talk about if the motion, if somebody wants, you know, then make a motion for a reduce.
We can certainly have discussion before a motion if that's the way you'd like to do that.
So I took a look at a couple of areas that I think is revenue side that will be affected by COVID-19. And these numbers are very rounded numbers. They're just based kind of on guesstimates here. My real point to summarize is I think we need to anticipate some reduction in revenues in some areas, and that may affect what we want to do, at least, if not on the motion itself, which would change like the levy rates, et cetera. But definitely, as we discuss about what happens with some expenditures going forward, because what happens is that if we approve a budget, if we do it like as presented, there's a lot of assumptions built in here that those line items are good to go. That you can, if you're the facilities of department, you can spend that money, okay, unless you need to come back to us. If you are our community services, you've got that amount of money in the line item to spend. So those are all assumptions. And I think that given the uncertainty of the COVID-19, we need to be more careful about people automatically spending, recognizing that our revenues could be affected. So here's just what I did. It's a very, very top view here. But the local option sales tax is likely to go down. Given if this lasts long, people are not spending as much money. So I just, and this is the amount I use, it has no backing right now, this is maybe hopefully a worst case scenario, but if right now we're budgeted for $920,000 of new local option sales tax to come in for fiscal year 21, let's say 50% of that doesn't come in. That's $460,000 that, to meet all of the requirements of the budget, are going to have to come from somewhere else or come out of the ending fund balance, which, of course, drops us down well below 25%. So then you take a look at then the treasurer. The treasurer has estimates on investments at $325,000. And we raised that from the $250,000 that originally, you know, was budgeted last year because interest rates were looking good. Now the Fed, with the actions by the Fed, the fact that who knows what it's going to pay out. I think we would be very wise to assume little return on our investment money. So once again, I'm just doing a worst case. So I took out that $325,000. So that money that was included as revenue that the treasurer was going to bring in may not be there. And then I took a look at the treasurer's motor vehicle fees. And so this is a tough, long period. We could be looking at, I guess, at 25% reduction. Once again, I don't know. I haven't checked industry standards or predictions. None of us know what's going to happen. But that was another $160,000.
So just among those items of a quick look at the budget, we're looking at, I think we could be looking at less revenue than budget of $945,000, just there if I'm close. So we're $1 million. So, yes.
Can I respond here?
Sure.
I think you're making a very, very good point that we're going to see some reduced revenues. We're only at March 24th. I think we can give a message to all our elected officials and department heads that you shouldn't be spending money that is for fiscal 21 that's been approved right now. I'd rather have a more methodical approach and let our assistant auditor bring us those numbers than us trying to do them right here at the table.
So my point is not that my numbers are accurate. My point is this budget includes three new people. And another position that we've never approved, but that we've shoved the funding already in. That's where I'm really headed here. So
if we approve those though, those they cannot start that hiring process, or they can't hire those people until July 1, correct?
My understanding is the amounts are included in this budget for hiring, but none of those three departments have come before the board to officially take action to hire.
So we don't give permission to hire by approving this budget.
Correct. That's my understanding. Alyssa, you want to key in there?
Alyssa, are you still there?
Yeah, I am. So the process has been they have to come to a Tuesday morning board meeting and get the position authorized by the board. So they would still need to do that.
But I guess the second part of that is we could have. I guess I'm hearing, and perhaps if we as Board of Supervisors wanted to, we could authorize this position prior to July 1. Or
would they have done that before, but that needs to be a specific request.
Okay.
From the department.
So that's within our authority. It's within our control whether or not those positions get authorized. So I'm just trying to give
people heads up.
I think that everybody understands that the economy is going to be affected mightily. Our revenues are tax revenues, so I think that, it's good for everybody to know that. I just don't want to, my sense is, let's get that message across, yes, but let's let our assistant auditor bring us the recommendations, and let's be cautious in the meantime. But not change all this work that's done now.
So one of the things that I would like to point out that is that we, all this does is approve the taxes and the askings and the expenses per service area. This does not appropriate the dollars.
Correct.
So that does not happen until we want to spend dollars starting July 1st.
And I thank you, and I was going to finish up by saying I don't propose that we actually reduce it, okay? I think my numbers are based upon what we're planning. So I just remember my first year on the board and remember some things happened then as we headed into the new budget, and I went, where did we approve that? And the comments came back about, well, you approved that at the time you approved the budget. So I agree, and yes, the positions have to come independently, but having watched and participated in discussions over the years where some people argued more vehemently that then why did you put it in the budget or why did you say something at budget time, I'm sharing with you, and what I've said today is based upon my personal experience, and that was when times were good. So with that, I'm going to make a motion. If that's okay.
What is your motion?
My motion is resolution 2018 for the fiscal year 2021 budget as presented.
You're motioning to approve?
I motion to approve it.
I'll second.
Do you have everything in that motion that we need?
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
I think there was a written motion.
It was
presented to us.
Okay, sorry. I've got several up here. I move to approve Resolution 2080 adopting the fiscal year 21 budget and certifying taxes as published
which includes assignment of funds as follows: amount in the general fund for specific purposes, amount in the ending rural fund as unallocated local option sales tax, and to direct the auditor to properly certify and file the budget and certificate of taxes.
Second. There's been a motion and second on resolution 20.80. And is there any further discussion?
None.
Not then. All in favor? Oh, excuse me, Olson?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution is adopted.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all your work and all the department heads, elected officials, and other employees who worked on this budget. I want to thank you. We did a good job on that, I believe, and we will continue to do a good job with the FY 20 and 21 budgets as we deal with the challenges of this. Agency reports, we have a written report from Central Iowa Tourism. We can look at that at our leisure and direct any questions to them. We're now at an update on bonding for secondary roads, and I apologize to Travis Squires. We had you scheduled for 10:45. I should have said a little later.
I pushed him to 11:30, and I'm trying to push him back to 11:15, so bear with me, please.
Okay.
Do you want to read that written report from the CDB? I'm trying to do laptop input, and it's not going.
Well, that's because okay.
We could go to consideration.
I don't have it plugged in yet because I wanted to look at it here.
Let's
technical difficulties. You want to look at it?
We're going to go on. So, okay, we'll go to item 12, consideration of minutes of March 17th and board meeting and March 17th canvas of election. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Hens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We've got minutes approved. 13, consideration of personnel actions. I would entertain a motion to approve personnel actions as presented.
So moved. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
So moved.
Second. Heddens.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Item 14, consent agenda. I've not heard of anybody wanting to pull anything. So is there a motion?
I move as presented.
Second.
Moving second. Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda is approved. How are we doing? We got public hearing items, and I'm not sure we could go ahead and do the one with Mike Cox if you'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mike Cox, are you on the phone?
I am.
Okay. Good. I'm going to open the public hearing and so I don't forget to do it. And Mike, would you give us a quick summary?
Yeah. Sure, thank you.
Mike, excuse me a second.
Yeah.
Can we do it after he does that?
Sure.
And open the public
hearing? Okay. I'm canceling opening the public hearing. Shelley wants me to wait until you present. So, Mike, why don't you go ahead and present?
Sure. Okay. That's okay. The action that I'm asking for you to consider, the Conservation Board is asking you to consider is to approve a purchase agreement or a real estate agreement for a piece of property north of Story City, just north of Story City along the South Sump River. This is a property that the owners approached us on a number of years ago now, offered an exceptional bargain sale and partial donation on the property, and we were also able to receive a REIT grant in the neighborhood of just a little bit more than $75,000 for the property. The property was purchased by the Iowa National Heritage Foundation from the original landowner, and now we're asking for approval to purchase this property from the Iowa National Heritage Foundation. The Conservation Board has considered this has recommended approval and has recommended that the funding from this come from the Energy Transfer Fund.
Okay.
And with that, I will take any questions.
Are there any questions before I open the public hearing?
I have none.
I have none.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. I'll open the public hearing. Are there any members of the public who have any comments to make? And if you're on mute, please unmute yourself if you want to make any comments. Hearing none, I will close the public hearing, and I would entertain a motion to buy the real estate, accept the real estate agreement with the Iowa National Heritage Foundation for the property in Section 6 of Howard Township.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Edens.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin.
Aye.
Approved. How are we doing, Lucy?
Well, I think it's still pushed to
11:30.
I don't know if he's left the room. And
well, let's keep going. I would note that we seem to have about 11 people in the room. 5, 6, 7, 8. Now we
have. I'll put Carla back in. I'll just let
people
out here.
Okay, well, we have 10 people in the room right now.
We're all socially distant from
one. We're all socially distant from each other, but I know people have left when they've looked in and seen that there are. Yeah, as long as we can maintain social distancing. Okay, so was Carla coming in?
Yes.
Carla left here?
Yeah. Sorry.
Is Carla
standing? There's a number one. Yeah, there's a consideration of standing Board of Supervisors meeting for COVID-19.
Where are we looking?
Under number,
oh, okay.
Number one.
Public
okay.
Number
two.
We have one thing. Okay.
Go.
Okay. Somebody submitted this. Did I submit this item?
I didn't submit it. So.
I did.
I did.
Okay.
Now I got to.
Okay.
Go ahead with Carla. I'm sorry.
Okay. Why don't we? Okay, we're jumping all around here. Let's go back to item one, and let's do the item two since Carla is here to present. Discussion and consideration of general assistance program eligibility modifications during COVID-19 precautionary measures and closure of Story County offices to the public. Carla, good morning.
Good morning, Board. Carla Webb, Story County Community Services. I'm bringing before you today items for consideration for our general assistance program as we are working with individuals who we're trying to complete work with them via phone, email, mail. And we're wanting to modify some of our criteria at this time for folks because we know that the recommendation is for folks to stay home as much as possible, limit shopping to essential shopping, those kinds of things. So right now what we would like to propose, we do have our general assistance application form in a PDF fillable format. That application does require a signature. I talked with Ethan Anderson about this, if it would be a possibility for individuals to type their name into that application and then submit it to us that way. And Ethan thought that that would be an acceptable form at this time to do that. So that's one item. The other item that we would ask for consideration is to waive doctor's verification if an individual indicates they're unable to work. Our program right now, if folks are unable to work, we request a doctor's statement, and we can potentially assist for up to 3 months, depending on how long that doctor indicates they're unable to work. So what we're suggesting at this time is waive that just one time per an applicant so that we're not having people maybe unnecessarily needing to go to their doctor at this point in time. So that would be one proposal there. It would just be one time. So if somebody did need ongoing assistance, we would need to work to get that doctor's statement for an additional month. Waive the job search requirement one time per applicant. Right now we do require with our program if individuals are unemployed, we ask them to complete a job search where they're applying at 3 different places of employment and get verification that they have applied at those places. So again, given the circumstances, we're requesting to waive that one time per applicant. The next item there is to waive Iowa DHS food assistance verification. Currently our processes is that we do ask for that verification from individuals to ensure they're receiving food assistance or that they have applied for that assistance. To make things easier for folks at this time, they would still need to identify that on their application and the amount that they're receiving. If they're currently not receiving it, we would ask them to get that application completed. DHS does have a drop box outside of their office that folks could drop that application off at. And then the other item, I believe we've hit the highlights here of where we anticipate some potential issues for folks, but just in case if there were any other items that came up as we go along, I do have their waive other program requirements at the director's discretion.
Carla, I just have a couple questions for you for clarification. So when you talk about waiving, like their verification for ability to work or waiving the job search, so is that, when you say one time per applicant, how long is that one time?
It would just be one time per that application. So if we're looking to assist in processing their application, if we provide that assistance, that would be their one time when it's waived. In typical assistance, we can only assist one time in a six-month period.
Okay, so it's six, I guess that's what I was looking at, your time frame is 6 months. I wasn't sure if it was a year or longer, so it's a six-month time frame. That's good for me. And then with the applicants with the typed signature, have you talked with Barb or anyone about the ability so that they could do an electronic signature? I'm fine with the type for this for the time being. I'm just wondering if that is also a possibility.
I haven't talked with IT. The staff member in our office that was working on the fillable document, the information that popped up to her when she was working on that, it appeared that the individual on the other end would need to have certain requirements in order to do that
to
electronic
be able to do that.
Signature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's our understanding at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. I entertain a motion.
I move to approve the General Assistance Program eligibility modifications during the COVID-19 precautionary measures and the closure of county offices to the public as presented.
Aye. Second.
Any further discussion? Hiddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Larkin? Aye. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Way to adapt.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to move item one to the end of the section of additional items because I'm assuming that we have aircraft now. Super.
We did cut this yesterday.
Okay, so we are on item 11.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, how's everyone doing today? I'm looking at the carpet, so that's good. I hope there's people listening.
We are here.
We're here, and we have people on comms call as well. So please go ahead and present.
That works. Okay, great. Okay.
Oh,
I see. There we go. Now I can see people perfectly. No problem. Well, thanks for making an electronic meeting work. I think we're all learning to be masters of flexibility. So I appreciate that opportunity to come to you via webcam today in my humble basement corner with, and you can't see the treadmill, but you can see my workout area with a makeshift desk from working from home. What I'd like to just review real quickly today are options that the county has as you move forward with your road improvement bonds. I'm going to share a presentation. You do have a handout that has some of the information on financing scenarios that I sent ahead of time, but the presentation component might be a little bit more robust, so I'm going to try to share that up there from my screen to yours. So let's see how this works. Okay. So what I'd like to go over today is just a real quick overview on financing plan options and potential timeline. With the financing plan, you know, some of the considerations for the board are, you know, presently your authority for the project and the project budget itself. In 2019, the Board of Supervisors held a hearing for not to exceed $8 million for the project, which will be outlined on the next slide. The project budget and putting it together, right now we're anticipating projects between $2.7 and $2.9 million with some contingency from talking with Lucy, the idea of, you know, potentially borrowing $3 million. That funds your current projects and perhaps gives you a little bit of cushion for engineering costs as you work into the next phase of projects, which could be borrowed for as soon as the spring of 21, but it could be later. So we're not anticipating that additional $5 million of authority that you have, so just looking at the current $3 million. Any questions so far?
No, thank you.
Okay. So just as a quick reminder, this was from the legal resolutions that were adopted in March of 2019, listing a few of the projects. Obviously, some of those that were held in that original hearing, you know, they're still under review. You're working through with other governing entities as to what those projects may look like. But for now, that's the current authority that you had for amounts to an $8 million hearing for improvement of county bridges, roads, and culverts, which included the following list of projects. So nothing new, no changes here on the projects that are being contemplated. So as we look at financial options for the county, a couple things to note. The county did levy taxes in fiscal 20 for the debt service payment. So you're currently collecting those taxes through the end of this fiscal year. So you potentially have the option to make a payment yet this June on the bonds. So that's what we would be anticipating, attempting to move forward with. And then making a payment in fiscal 21 for the approval of a levy that you had already today. So the total for the first 2 years' payments, about $950,000 or just shy of $1 million. And then you're going to see a couple different options, a 7, 10, and a 12-year schedule, which is on the handout that you have that ultimately allocates the rest of the bond payments. So for the first option, it's really about level debt service on a $3 million issue over 7 years. It's about $450,000 annually when averaged out. In this case, we're assuming a rate of 2.25%. Currently, be a little bit lower than that based on our current market conditions, which I'll allude to earlier or a little bit later, are certainly changing quite a bit. So this would provide you with a little over $2.95 million of total spendable dollars, depending on issuance cost for the loan. A secondary option would be to structure this $3 million over 10 years. This, you know, allocates the amount that you've levied in years fiscal 21 and 22, and then lowers your payments to about $290,000 annually over the next 8 years, so fiscal 22 out to 29. Again, probably just a slightly higher interest rate, but not materially so. If I'm going back to the 7 year schedule today, that rate is actually well under 2%. I would still think the 10 year rate is also well under 2% as well. The third option then would be to look at a 12 year schedule. This one would stretch payments out to 2031. Payments go from, on average over the next 2 years of about $470,000 down to about $230,000. The advantage of this scenario is that if you do look at doing the remaining $5 million of projects, It's likely that you could do that with keeping your payments around a $500,000 annually, but perhaps extending another year or two out to 2033. Now, this current 12-year schedule would also likely be just under 2%, and we could be ready to move forward with locking in interest rates in the next couple weeks. So before I talk a little bit on timeline, would you like to, do you have any questions over the different debt structures between 7, 10, and 12?
No, I don't see any. Please continue.
Okay. So in terms of a financing timeline, there's financing steps. You know, we typically book those as the authority or the hearing that's already been held. The resources that need to be in place, in this case, levies for fiscal 20 and 2021. And then securing the financing, we've outlined some tentative dates. We could have term sheets out to banks. And when we say banks, we'd be looking at both local banks and probably a national footprint on banks to try to get the best loan execution for the county. We look to receive bids back within 2 weeks at your April 7th meeting, at which point you would be able to lock in interest rates, and then completing the issuance documents either April 21st or 28th meeting. Sorry, I got an extra zero in there. With closing on May 13th. So that would be the tentative timeline for receipt of proceeds to allow the county to move forward with some of the road improvement projects that are currently under design. So I think in summary, you have the ability, any to fund a portion of the road projects now, but you can still wait until the other projects are through the design phase before proceeding with the additional street projects, road projects in this case. And so as part of what we're seeing in the market right now, it's fairly volatile bond market, but we are seeing pretty good activity out of banks for what we call bank loan placements. And so that would be the anticipated scenario that we would look to try to secure a loan at a fixed rate for the county that accomplishes this kind of phase one of your road improvement project financing, and then come back with phase two as you work through some of the design projects. So that was the kind of earlier this year, the thought process that was talked through with bond counsel, county auditor, and your county engineer about the, I guess I'd say the certainty of some of the projects moving forward now, and perhaps some of the uncertainty on the timeline of a few of the future projects that were included in the $8 million hearing authority. This time I'll kind of entertain any specific questions that you might have, but ultimately what we'd be looking for today would be a nod to move forward with processing the first phase of the financing. If you decide that, we'd rather wait and take a little bit more time on these decisions, the only thing that occurs is it pushes out the overall financing plan and potentially makes it so that you're not able to make a debt payment on this in fiscal 20. So then that first principal payment goes out to fiscal 21, which does add a little bit of interest cost to the overall scenario. So happy to entertain questions. I know this isn't super easy with the remote access and the microphones, but if you have a question and Lucy can hear it and repeat it, I'll do my best to answer your questions at this time.
Okay. I think we're okay. Can you hear me right now?
Yeah, it's a little bit distant, but I can make out most of it.
Okay, I was just, we might have to have the question repeated then, but I'm the closest to the phone. This is Linda Merkin.
He's not on the phone, he's on my laptop.
Okay, Lucy will do it then. Okay. First, let me ask, do the auditor or engineer anything you would like to add to the, okay, Darren Moon is coming too.
Darren's coming. Engineer.
Yeah, Darren Moon, County Engineer. My only comment would be, I would ask, if possible, not to delay any further because Huxley has already accumulated some bills for design. They've held off on billing the county until we get the funds in place. So that'd be the only timing issue I just want to make you aware of.
Lucy, can you repeat that?
Darren Moon, engineer, stated that he doesn't want to have any more delays because we do have the $1 million road project in Huxley that needs to be paid yet this fiscal year, and they're already asking for their funds as World Problems.
Yep.
I would say for the audience,
I think I might have lost the call, though.
I would say from the auditor's office, when we looked at the three options, our favorite option from our office standpoint would be option number three in terms for the smoothest levy over time. But we would also like to not make a principal payment in FY20. We weren't anticipating that. We could make that yet in FY21. That's more of a nuanced approach, I guess, to what you have proposed there, Travis.
Yep, we can. That's not a big issue.
Welcome to the meeting. Please enter meeting ID and press.
Sorry, I'm having technical issues with our conference call.
You will now be placed into the meeting.
Okay, sorry.
I was trying to put the volume down and I hit end of the call. Can anybody hear me? Is anybody still on the call?
Yes, we can still hear you.
Okay, good. We're on the call.
Yeah, here, Linda.
Okay, then we're fine. Nobody else has to answer. We're on the call. Thank you very much, and pardon me for that. You were saying that you option three was your preference?
Yeah, from just looking at the out years and having the smoothest levy and leaving ourselves some room for additional projects as needed.
But you did mention, Lucy, that you prefer a modification so that you didn't have the principal payment in 2020. You prefer it in 2021. Is that correct?
Yes.
I just want to make sure I heard what you were saying correctly.
But that is...
That'd be fairly simple.
You can make those. That was sort of a nuanced adjustment that's not a throwing this out and asking for something.
Yeah, correct.
Can we ask for bids on all three options? Do we have to narrow it?
You might have to repeat that.
Travis, the question is, could we ask for bids on all three options, or are you looking for a direction today?
I think it would be easier to narrow it to two as opposed to three. At this point, I'm not certain the 7-year scenario makes a ton of sense if you're planning on doing the additional portion of the projects within the next couple of years, because that would just result in increased payments, and you don't have kind of a smoother aggregate debt service scenario.
Are there any other questions?
None.
Okay. We ready for a motion then?
No other questions. They're going to a motion here now.
Okay.
This is just an update.
Oh, we don't need to. Is it just direction then? Without a motion?
Yeah, just want to get direction from Travis.
So I think what we're hearing is direction to pursue with options 2 and options 3. With first principal payment in 2021.
They're asking for looking for places for options 2 and 3, and then first principal payment not due until FY21.
Is that
enough direction for you?
Is that
perfect.
Is that agreeable to the other supervisors?
Yes.
Okay.
And you want to keep the proposed timeline that I had outlined with trying to have bond proceeds early May?
Yeah.
I think Darren's nodding his head.
That's what the engineer wants, I know.
We're all in agreement.
We're fine with that.
Okay. Anything else?
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Travis.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for making this work.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I have no idea why we ended up having music, but I think I didn't have any other option than call anyway to get rid of it. So since we got back on, we're in good shape. Next, we'll go to item three. Consideration to allow Margaret James, Story County Sanitarium, in the event of a remote working assignment, to park the department vehicle at her residence in Iowa, would allow ready access for environmental health field work without having to travel to the administration office in Nevada. Vehicle would be parked at James's residence while not being used for environmental health field work. And Margaret, you are on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think I understand the request. Let me ask, I don't have questions, but does anybody have any questions with Margaret?
Well, actually, I did some checking with Lisa Markley, and it looks like there would be a tax implication to Margaret if she actually had the vehicle at home. But it doesn't sound like there would be one if the vehicle was just parked at, like, the Human Services building. And Margaret, you can give a little bit more on your reasoning for wanting to do this. This was a question she had because of the Board of Health, the number of reviews or that she needs, surveys that she needs to go out and do, where it's just herself, she's not interacting with the public at all. But her conversation to me at least was that should we get down to just minimal people here at the building, did it make sense for her to come all the way over here versus the distance of just going right to the Human Services building, grabbing the vehicle, which has all her equipment in, and going out and doing the duties of her position, if that can continue and the state hasn't gone into some other, you know, state of protection.
Okay, Margaret, I think Lisa just explained your request, but the thing I'm hearing is there's a tax implication if it's parked at your home, but not at the Human Services building, which is a county operation. And Mr. Markley is coming to the microphone.
And I haven't had a chance to review this with Ethan, but my interpretation of IRS Code 15.B is it's a commuter fee. So if you're commuting with it or leaving it at your home, there would be a taxable non-cash is what it is. So it's $3 a day. We currently already have 4 employees that take vehicles home, and that's how they're charged.
Is that, you mean, like the 4 that take vehicles home, are those the sheriff's deputy?
No, the sheriff's exempt from this. The sheriff's vehicles are exempt from this. The ones are what the Board of Supervisors by resolution in 2001 determined would be people that are required to take their vehicles home, to the emergency management staff, the facility staff, and Mr. Moon out in the audience there. So my interpretation would be that if you left it at the Human Services Center, which is a county-owned building, and you just went there, got it, and went out, that would be non-taxable. That would not be a taxable commuting charge.
So it's considered income at the rate of $3 a day?
Yes.
Okay. So, Margaret, let me just ask you, since I'm closest to the telephone here, would parking it at the Human Services building be where you would rather do that?
That would be just fine.
That would be fine. Okay. Any other questions for Margaret or for Lisa?
No, I'm assuming, Margaret, that you worked, I mean, you're the only one who uses that vehicle, right? It's not used by P&Z staff at all or your other staff?
Sometimes Kathy Badalinski uses it, but she too lives in Ames.
Okay.
So having it in Ames at Human Services, you might have to coordinate use of it, but she could also utilize it.
Yes.
Okay.
And this her proposal was in the event of remote working assignment.
Right. Correct. Yes. Okay. Any other questions? Any other information before we? Okay. Then I would entertain a motion.
So, I need a clarification because of how it's written here. I guess my motion would be to allow Margaret Jane to have the county vehicle parked at the Human Services Council building in the event of a remote working assignment to be utilized to continue out her work as available due to COVID-19.
It has been a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? If not, Hedlund?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, if you don't mind, I'm going to go back up to number one. I think we can do that one quickly and get that out of the way. Discussion and consideration of Standing Board of Supervisors meeting for COVID-19 response and recommended actions. I don't know if we need a motion or not. We can decide that. The three supervisors have held Friday morning for a second meeting. And specifically, what I think we're all in agreement on, or what I think we're looking at, is a regular Tuesday meeting could also have special items if they were urgent items that needed to be acted upon because of COVID-19 and whatever's happening there. The special meeting on Friday would be specifically a special meeting for emergency items. In other words, if there's regular reports to come to the board, they should continue to be scheduled for Tuesday, and if there are things that people know about in advance, they should get their documentation to our secretary, as they always have. If it's a special needs to be done quickly, it could be put on either the Tuesday or the Friday agenda. Is that the understanding everybody's got, or do we want to do something different there? Do we need to have board action? If we do, that's fine.
I think the clarity just is that Friday's meeting is to deal with COVID-19 stuff that we can't wait until Tuesday. We don't want to veer from Tuesday as our regular meeting. It is our regular meeting, and the public's used to it being our regular meeting. So,
yeah, I agree. I think that would be fine to have that additional meeting on that Friday, or stipulated that it's for COVID, but also recognizing as things are ever evolving, we may have to have an emergency meeting on a Wednesday or a Thursday. But we just know, I just think it's good for the public to know that we are trying to address things as quickly as possible, and having that standing additional meeting helps us to respond better.
And for staff who are bringing things that need to urgently be dealt with, do not wait till Friday, but from the Tuesday agenda, or say if it's Wednesday and we can't wait till Friday, we'll set another special meeting. We're kind of direction approval.
So moved that we, for the meantime, we set a standing board meeting on Friday morning at 10 o'clock to deal with COVID-19 response issues.
Second.
Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Desmond?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. Done. Next would be item 4, discussion and consideration of directing all staff and directory. I'm sorry, somebody said something. No, to be back, I'm sorry. Discussion and consideration of directing all staff under authority of the Board of Supervisors to include or copy all three supervisors on correspondence, status, situation, updates, etc., even if the primary recipient is only one supervisor and requesting that other elected officials and their staffs, plus any county employees not under authority of the Board of Supervisors, voluntarily do the same.
Okay, this is all about situational awareness and sharing information at a time when there's so many emails coming in and crossing each other's desks, to make sure that we, all three supervisors, are aware what's going on. And the next item, it'll become a little clearer maybe as some of us divide up some areas and topics to try and kind of act as liaison on. But so that's what this is really about, is that situational awareness and making sure that all three supervisors know what's happening, and it's up to each supervisor to delete it if they don't feel they need to deal with it.
Okay.
if somebody else is dealing with it or whatever. So.
So are you just thinking, I'm just thinking of just the volume of email that this may produce.
Yes.
And whether I need all of that information, particularly when we have the board table to provide that and we have staff coming before us to provide us those updates. I'm just concerned that if I would get all of that information that I would lose it.
So,
and then I would be running around to, you know, all sorts of individuals trying to,
mm-hmm.
versus having them present to us or having, you know, us as, are on certain committees that present to us, because we do have a portion on our agenda each week that has liaison assignments, committee meetings, updates.
But what's happening is we're not getting all the information. I mean, you know, so I agree with you. In a perfect world, it would be that we would be getting all three of us the information we need for situational awareness to keep a track of who's doing what, so we're not tripping over each other for one thing. Another thing is that so we're aware of what we need to be. And in the event that we go to some kind of remote location kind of situations, email is going to be our primary way of communicating. We can't drop by, you know, or say, oh, by the way, this happened. I understand what you're saying, okay? And considering I, too, daily am empty, trying to keep ahead of my, your mailbox is full, that's daunting. But we've got to find some way to actually share information so that we know what's happening. And also, you know, in the worst case scenario, one of us gets sick and is not functional anymore, and they have information that the other two of us need.
One other thing I would add is, we wish to be invited. One is situational awareness. We are having status reports daily now because we have activated our PFOG. Right now we have a CCMT meeting once a week. I don't think we're going to stay just at once a week very long. But I think the status reports are really the summary that helps us in terms of our situational awareness. Two more things that I am thinking about. One of them is I'm trying very much, and I've used webmail, which is fairly clunkier thing than being on your VPN, and it's very hard. It's harder to isolate and delete quickly on webmail. It takes you a lot more time when you're using webmail to try to figure out which of the largest emails to delete. And I'm also thinking about our server, and I know an email can be, I know an email is just an email that doesn't have a huge attachment on it, isn't a whole lot on the server, but some of the emails I'm seeing that are coming through, I have been forwarding to the two of you, and I've looked at them sometimes and said, this is a huge email. I forward it and delete it, but then throw another huge email in your inbox. And I'm trying to just say, okay, you're going to delete two, but in an emergency, I need to think we're going to end up with mailboxes full and not get the really, really important emails because we've got all the other emails coming in. I'm only really trying to, you know, forwarding things that I think is important for people to have, but I'm just concerned about the volume. And we're also asking, we're directing the staff to do that, and I'm thinking, if I send an email to a staff member and ask a question, and I think it's a question for me as a staff member, then obligated to copy all three supervisors on her or his answer. And it gets to be pretty, I'm very weary of it.
So can we go back to a couple of your questions? The first one, Barb, are you on the phone?
Barb's going back to you on the phone.
Okay, so the volume thing. Okay. The second thing is I agree, you know, as far as answering a question would seem to be, you know, exchange would seem to be pretty benign, but communication is important here. The longer we go on, the more we're going to fit into new roles. The more we're going to fit into our grooves, and we're going to know who we need to communicate to about what. And I agree, it's clunky. It's really cumbersome. But I know also, because from my own personal experience, there's information that's not getting through right now. And that comes as we all remember and need to open up that we need to communicate with each other. And I do come from the communication industry, the theory is better to be told about something twice than not at all. So if you don't want to go with this formal, I put it on as a formal as a direction because we had a discussion a week ago, week and a half ago, that we can't just ask staff to do something. They can decline to do it, right? Unless it comes from all three of us up here. So as we hit this new norm, this is really about being able to provide people the information they need in a timely manner. I'm open to any scenarios that assure us that we're getting the correct, getting the information. Personal updates, apparently, you know, we're all so busy right now, and since the two of us make the quorum, we can't have staff members running around from office to office and giving information to each one of us. In the past, and sometimes that's what has happened on various issues, has been that one of the staff would come and let all three of us know. I'm looking for a way that makes sure we all three know what's going on.
Why do we encourage staff to be more, you know, increasingly vigilant about thinking, not vigilant, the right word, but thinking about might this be something all supervisors should get? And try to include when they think it is. It was make sure to include it, not just direct. I'm a little wary about the direction. I mean, I think the suggestion of thinking about communication is just awesome.
I think my other concern is, what if somebody doesn't? What if it's just, you know, your norm is to always send to you, Loris, for example, and you forget to send to Linda or Elise or something. Is there potential repercussions for that? And I don't want to put any of the staff in that type of position in the environment that we're dealing with right now. That would be my concern, is that, they didn't. That sets up a potential disciplinary action or whatever against them. I would like, at least for right now, and again, this is ever-evolving and stuff, is to, encourage them to provide that information as much as we can do from our CCMT meetings and stuff. And I think it's just something we're going to have to probably keep revisiting to see how that communication is flowing, because I don't want to inadvertently hurt a potential employee.
And I'm not interested in that either.
Yeah.
Certainly, this is not for repercussions. This is back to training, including the three of us at this board table, that we need to share with each other.
Sure.
That and stuff. So, I'm willing to try to please everybody do this right now, and then for us to make the pledge to each other that we are updating each other or forwarding Supervisor Murphy is right about the number of large files that are coming through. They're pretty onerous, some of them, okay? But, so I'm willing to go with that. I just put it on this plate because of the conversation we had before, but a voluntary effort to see if we can get communication going so everybody knows what's going on is fine with me.
So it's awareness.
It's awareness. Yeah, awareness. Do not need to, see everything that's just a back and forth on a real particular little item. Okay, thank you for that.
And let's go to item 5. Discussion and consideration of the board supervisors distributing among themselves liaison and leadership responsibilities for specific tasks, competency areas needing enhanced or immediate attention while operating under the COVID-19 pandemic parameters and activation of the county's plan whistle.
Okay, we have discussed this ministerially already among the three of us, but that there are certain little mini projects or certain areas of emphasis that are tied to what we may already be involved in related to our committee assignments, our external committee assignments. need for awareness, need to coordinate things. And so we all three had set ministerial sessions. I'm interested in updating us on that, on this. I'm updated following that, et cetera. So I have just along with this sent out for a little mini list about those areas. I think it would be helpful. We've already discovered here one
of the
No, I said to bring it on. I said if you send it by 7 a.m. Monday morning, I can get it to staff and we can get it on this agenda. Otherwise, please bring a little list.
I've got 17-9.
Okay, so that's fine. So you brought a list, right?
Well, it's something that I didn't have for Jeremy.
I had spelled it out. Lisa, did you do a separate?
I did not. Sorry.
Okay. Well, part of here's my list. Okay. All right. That's no problem. Here's my list. And so, so once again, so that, and then the staff knows too what kind of we are have just split up among ourselves already. So, chapters 21 and 22, compliance related to policy, procedure, technology. I've talked to Ethan already about that, about some things for coordination. Talking to Barb and Kyle, we'll be talking more, trying to get some of the issues worked out. But we would all like for this to be done in two weeks. Right, but to get chapter 21 compliance especially so that everybody knows how they can go ahead and conference, how they have to post for conferencing, and Ethan and I discussed a couple of other issues. I said we'd love to have this done in 2 weeks, but the longer it goes on, it may be more for the need of it.
But some of it is day-to-day.
And some of it's day-to-day.
And
2 weeks, okay, maybe I shouldn't have thrown that in. I just said we'd all love to see this done in 2 weeks and back to normal.
Okay, well, I'm just saying because I've managed to work with Leanne on how we're going to do the CCMT meeting tomorrow.
Right, correct.
So I couldn't.
Yeah, so I shouldn't have thrown it in. Okay, so this is.
Some things won't wait.
Some things won't wait.
Yes,
I mean, 2 weeks was just kind of, sorry, I was trying to be lighthearted.
What I'm saying is I needed to talk to Leanne and I needed to talk to Kyle directly.
So, but you and I have discussed that and moving forward, and I'm talking to Kyle and Barb this afternoon about working that all out. Right, so that's different. Financial impact, just paying attention to the budget and externally kind of talking, keeping in contact with AADC, business and industry, finding out what's happening out there and how it relates to us. And some of these, by the way, I'll point out with that one, are also happening down in emergency management. They've already activated a couple of these scenarios already in the EOC. And once again, it's situational awareness as we update each other, too, about what's going on in these. The Hunger Coalition and food banks. Transportation is really public transportation, I should have put on there. And then to just be as liaison if the assessor's office needs us, because I don't sit on one of those other committees as an ex officio that you do, and so we have mentioned that. So those are the areas right now with trying to get some things done quickly and coordinating, because we do have some tripping over each other. So, all right, how about you guys' list?
I just had the two on there, the child care partnership, and then the Board of Health. That's taking more time than I kind of anticipated or whatever on there, because we are meeting more often. We had a special meeting last week. We're having a special meeting tonight just for general awareness and so that Board of Health knows exactly what they are, have the ability to do or not do statutorily under the code. So those are some of the things that we are looking at there. Child care, certainly through the EOC and other partners are certainly working on having developing child care for, for essential workers such as your fire, police, health, including mental health, utility, and that definition may get expanded as things kind of evolve, working with the clinics, the hospital, extension, school districts, you know, other churches, other organizations like YSS, for example, or Child Care Resources and Referral, have just kind of all come together to discuss this particular issue so that we can have something in place immediately should the need arise to that particular level. I'm just looking at the number of children that we'd be needing to take care of, and then also one thing that they would need to do is still have background checks of individuals and just the process for that to occur as well.
You had mentioned a couple of days ago about liaison, or at least giving a list about potential future suggestions to the legislature.
Yes. And that was going to be my point. I have that as well. That I'm just at least from my point of what I've kind of seen so far, of things that, you know, they sound good, they work well, but gosh, when you're in the midst of a pandemic, there are some barriers to be able to do some processes, and that is something that I hope to, particularly after all of this, and we have kind of that discussion of talking to all the department heads and find out, okay, what barriers did you encounter because of what's in the code? That could be good or bad, but when you have to do a quick response, what are some things that we can at least present to the legislature? And then also recognize, are some of it anything that the state has control over, or is it something more federally that we need to have, that needs to be addressed or looked at? My hope is this is the only pandemic that in my lifetime that I have to deal with it or something like this, but you don't know. And I think we always need to look at how to be prepared. So that is something else that I'm working on as well, or starting a general list.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You sent in on NAPO conference call earlier this week. Do you think that us sitting in on those is going to be valuable, or just keeping track of federal legislation, is it just too much?
It was mainly just talking about what was in the kind of recovery bills that are out there. They did have some time for Q&A, but that was the main focus, was just giving kind of folks just a general what's out there. Again, that's ever quickly evolving. It's good to know as when we were looking at our temporary employment policies, some of the discussion were things that I could bring to a list and say, hey, this is something they said. Don't look at just the first, documentation. Making sure you're looking at the second amendment that passed through that has certain changes, which I know that she did that. So it just made a little bit of awareness to be listening in on that. How technical it might be going forward, I don't know. I don't know how many more pieces of legislation might be going through. I certainly didn't ask any questions at NACO, but just listen to the pieces of legislation going through. Would it necessarily be the top priority versus some of the things going on locally? It's hard to say. It's really hard to say, because a lot of it's going to trickle down other ways. It might be something good to listen to, but if I certainly have other things locally that are more pertinent, that's what I'm going to focus. That's going to be my priority area. Yeah.
We don't know when we get one of those whether it's going to be something useful.
Yeah, and I think some of it is. I think it kind of depends what they say is going to be on their agenda, for one. And sometimes you can tell right away once they first start presenting whether it's really something beneficial at the time or not.
Anything else?
No.
Well, that's all I had on my list. I was going to ask you about tracking the federal legislation, but I think that I know Keith Morgan is doing it in terms of the issues that make him up with FEMA reimbursement. Mm-hmm. I know that Alyssa is doing it in terms of the personnel, HR aspects. So I think those are the two things that we really need to watch for. So. I've been keeping in touch with Emergency Management. I chair the Emergency Management Commission, so I've been working with Keith on some aspects and things that we need to get going. and also next issue of conservation. So I've been talking to Mike about how that's going and their processes there. Since he said he doesn't report to one of our directors. Also been trying to keep in touch with the sheriff's office and the county attorney's office, since they do have a lot of public safety boards that I'm on. So I've kind of been looking at that. Also working with Shelley, working with Ethan on making sure that we are complying with the open meetings law and all of that, and open records in terms of CCMT, which is
You're switching that over to me then? We had discussed this part.
Switching what?
Well, about the 21, Chapter 21 and 22 compliance.
Well, I had the notes for this week for things that were this week, and I think I've gotten resolved the CCMT issue. Since I chair CCMT,
yes.
I will probably reach out to Ethan or Leanne to coordinate that.
Okay, got it.
But
so then we'll make the transfer.
Setting up meetings, if I need to know something right away, I'm going to go and find it.
Well, I would ask, once again, so we don't trip over each other, I'd ask that we kind of follow through about what we're trying to do and communicate with each other.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
No, not right now.
I still have our daily ministerial meetings on my calendar, and as long as we're doing ministerial, I think we have the opportunity, because we're, at least right now, we're in the office form, because most of our meetings are canceled and they're held electronically, so I think that can help. Moving on then, is that okay? There are no department reports, going to other reports. Darren, thank you for being patient and waiting for us to get through that. I see that you have two items. Okay, you need to come over here, Darren.
I'll try to do it without presentation. Darren, do you want me to run the computer? Yeah, if you want to plug it in, I can try this one without the presentation. We have something already on the agenda. You do, but I can't pull it out right now. It's an attachment. This is the pre-designed agreement, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Sometimes the link doesn't work when I'm using my iPad.
Oh, I got it now. I got it. Yeah, I think it's because I had two windows open, so.
Okay. What we have on the agenda is the pre-designed agreement for the 580th interchange with the DOT. We've never been through this process before with the DOT, so that's another reason I wanted Ethan to stick around. I'm going to give him, there's no action item today, so Ethan has at least another week to review this. I want to make sure we're not committing ourselves to something in the future here. There's multiple agreements. The first one is the pre-design agreement, which we have on today. In the future, there's apparently going to be a pre-construction agreement. This pre-design agreement today will tie us to the actual layout of the interchange and makes us responsible for those frontage roads. Nowhere does it get into the cost part of this. That's the next agreement, so I want to make sure by approving this we're not tying ourselves to any future costs. So that's the part I kind of want Ethan to double check before the board actually approves this. We're not tying ourselves to something in the future. Verbally, so far the DOT has said they would cover the cost of all these frontage roads if we maintain them in the future. So a couple, you've seen this once a while back, a couple of changes I want to make you aware of. There is some existing concrete out in front of the DOT maintenance facility, Highway 30. I don't know how old that is. It's fairly old, so I made the comment I didn't really want to take that over since it's already an old pavement. We could be having to improve that fairly soon. So, I'm not sure where the cell tower is for sure. This is the DOT main facility by the churches out there.
Yeah, by the churches.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a tower. Yeah. I just
don't know the church. Yeah, just be on the north side of 30 there. Mm-hmm. They did take that stretch of pavement off the agreement, so they will maintain that in the future themselves. The other change is on the south side of the highway is 241st. It's an existing paved stretch that goes back to kind of that industrial park we have on the south side of 30 there. It's an existing pavement the DOT currently maintains, but there is some issues with that pavement. It's not that old, but the asphalt kind of slipped off in a couple of places. So in the agreement, they've agreed to replace half of that pavement or upgrade that pavement before it gets turned over to the county. But the county will be responsible for that in the future, according to the agreement. So I'm okay with how everything's laid out. The only thing I would like to ask of the DOT is that they will be responsible for the any future costs of improving the road, but the actual maintenance, snow and ice control and stuff, it just makes sense the DOT does that stretch back to their facility. They work all hours of the night. I hate to be responsible for maintaining that when they're going to be on it all night anyway. So I want to make the request that they at least do the snow and ice control on that stretch of road up to the interchange. So that is the only thing that I would recommend we change on this current proposal. But they would like us to take action on this fairly soon. And the other thing that needs to be updated on this for certain is Scott Docks that are no longer with the DOT.
Oh, really?
He is at the end.
Did he retire?
He starts the Asphalt Paving Association today.
Oh.
So I think it was kind of retirement. But I don't know the details for sure. But so we'll have to get the current person and then make sure the current person is still okay with the agreement before we move forward with it. But my goal is to put this on a future board agenda, probably on the consent agenda, if Ethan doesn't have any additional concerns.
So Darren, that's what you were, when you were talking about in your initial was about, you said previously the DOT said they'd cover the cost if we maintain, it is that particular stretch of road that you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the cost portion of that is covered in a future pre-construction agreement. But I just want to make sure by approving this, we're not tying ourselves to anything in the future. If we have the right to, if the DOT all of a sudden says, no, I think you need to pay for some of this, can we back out?
On the consent agenda, we'll assume that you're happy.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Appreciate that. Any questions, Darren, on that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on to section, the second, 5-year secondary road construction program. Would you want somebody to...
I'll attempt to do it here, but if some questions come up, we can pull it up.
Just put it on the screen.
The intention of today's agenda item is just to see if the board has received any additional comments from the public on the five-year program proposal, or if you have any additional comments. I have not received any additional comments on the proposed program at this point. I'm comfortable how it's currently laid out. Probably the biggest portion that still has some question marks is the bonding side, which doesn't necessarily even flow through our budget, so that doesn't really impact the budget side. The program side, we still program the projects, but if you have a project program that doesn't happen, that's not a big deal. So, what we discussed already today with the bonding proposal, there's 7 bonding projects, and if we do the $3 million bond, that would cover 5 out of the 7 projects. So the only 2 left would be the 13th Street paving and the 530th Avenue paving. We've already kind of established on 530th with the additional cost of utility relocations, there really isn't enough money in the current bond proposal to even do that project. So I think we've pretty well agreed that's going to have to fall out of this bonding proposal, and there would have to be a new bond proposal to cover that one. Now, 13th Street is the other one. We were having some right-of-way negotiation issues, so it's been delayed a little bit up to this point. And with all that's going on right now, whether we want to continue with this or not, we can leave it in the current program as it is, but at some point we're going to have the additional discussion on how we move forward with that.
Darren, okay, so if we could again clarify exactly where we are, it's my understanding that the property owner where that we would need the easements from still wants to come to the table and have a discussion, and the issue is the price. And in the past, hasn't it been that when there's been kind of a difference in the price between where you are and where the person would be, that it's come back to the board? And the board is the one who, the board makes the decision about how much we're willing to pay in order, you know, isn't that how it works? It's really not you that sets that?
In the past, how it's happened is we have our initial meetings with how we normally appraise land. Mm-hmm. If our initial meetings don't go well and they want more, I try to get some feedback from the board chair. Now I go through Sandra to get some feedback from the board chair on that.
So, but there's three of us up here, so we need to change that because
the board chair can't keep the negotiations going.
Right.
You're not tying the board to anything. It comes back to the board for approval at that point, and that's where you could say no.
But the three of the board, the board chair doesn't have the ability to go ahead and say stop negotiations or put negotiations on hold. Actually, that's kind of what we heard, you know, when we heard before. All three of us would have to have a meeting, you know, and have it on the agenda. And we'd have to go on closed session. But so that's my concern.
I'm telling you how we've done it.
Okay.
That was your question. How you want to do it in the future, that's up to the board. You direct me how you want to handle it and we'll go from there.
Legally, that's how it has to be done. One
thought is, I think our engineer is the expert in this, and he understands what other negotiations have been, what's the reasonable cost, and my personal thought is that I think that we need to negotiate the best of your judgment with all your background on the issue. And if you can't get something negotiated that you think is reasonable, come back to us, ask for a closed session, and explain it to us, and then we can do something then. But I don't want us to insinuate ourselves early on in the process where the expertise lies with our engineer.
Okay, so it's my understanding that we're at that point, that you are not willing to go any higher, correct, on your expertise, taking your factors. Okay. I have been given information, including the fact that there are other factors involved here that may make that worth more. And so at that point, I want to put it on the agenda then. Okay. So that's just, so we'll do it that way, that I understand it's nothing against your expertise, Darren. I think you have done what you've been able to do within your parameters. There's now other issues that have to be looked at, and that has to come to the board, I think, at this point. So I'll talk to you about getting it on another agenda soon so we don't hold this project up.
That's the other part of the discussion.
Yeah.
We want to discuss if we want to do the project first before we go down that road. I'd like feedback from the board if this is still a project we want to even pursue at this time. It is part of the bonding proposal, so it doesn't affect, like I said, the rest of our budget. I starting to have some concerns with funding.
Source of funds
is strictly bond money.
Yeah.
Bond.
Right. No, we're paying back all of it. There's no highway funds, anything road funds, anything
correct.
On the level of government to us. So this project, we are committing in an uncertain financial time with taxpayers to quite a bit of money.
Yeah. That's a big concern of mine, and the other one is we're still going to be left with a half a mile of unpaved going down to the co-op that should be city responsibility.
The data doesn't want to continue on now, right?
That's the latest I've heard is it's not in their plan to do anything, and we're already paving a half mile that's in the city limits for them because it's a bond project.
So
that's another thing to consider.
So you're right, and so the other side of the considerations that need to be weighed in general are the fact is that that road, will it, can it be used for economic development if in fact what's going on with Prairie View? So I understand there's some ifs in there, but we need to have that discussion because as I understand it right now, our number one holdup is that we can't get easements. So we're not going forward, correct? Now, then we can make a decision if we want to go ahead and take it forward and for that situation with Nevada, et cetera. But I believe sitting on the AADC exec board, they've not asked me, by the way, this is just other discussions or whatever, that we really, it's time for us to figure out going forward if we have a real limitation or whether the investment would end up contributing to any kind of recovery. But anyway, so that's why I want to get it on now. I know there are bumps in the road. I understand that. But it's in this plan now. Now, including the bonding. So that's why I think we need to have that discussion and either and bring it to a finite point one way or go forward. So.
Very
special,
certainly.
So anyway, so I'll put it on the agenda. We can do our thing wherever we end up. Okay.
Whether you want the project to move forward or not,
that could be. I'm not talking about negotiations. I'm talking about whether we want the project to move forward.
But there's nothing wrong with approving the project or the program like it is now currently proposed.
Okay.
It can be adjusted at any time. Anything else with the program? Like I said, this is an action item today, but similar to last item, I'd like to put this on the next week or two as a consent with we have a DOT budget. We have a county budget and a DOT budget. They match. You've already approved the county budget, so it just matched, so we need to submit that to the DOT, so I'll put that and the program on the consent agenda in the future.
Okay.
That's all I have for the program side.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Discussion of presentations to the board supervisors by the auditor.
Clerk. By the clerk? I just want to remind you that we have the quarterly and the annual reports are being submitted, documents being submitted. But we do have some presentations coming up. We have a presentation on the 4th-ish, whatever date that is. And
the 7th?
Yeah. So if you want it to be, I can contact the person and ask them to do it via conference call, like we did today. We do have a proclamation coming up, so we can do that the same way. What do you guys want to do?
I personally think as much as you can limit in-person presentations are the best, especially, I don't know, where we're going to be in a week from now.
So this afternoon when I go down to talk to Barb and Kyle and probably have additional conversations moving forward in the next couple of days about more of the Zoom capacity, et cetera. Okay, so I'll have more information to how much capacity there'd be for various types of presentations. But definitely, I think we should limit contact as much as possible. I know the one on the 7th, is that the NADC for the rec center?
Well, it's not the NADC.
What's the rec center committee? Okay.
Field house.
Yeah, field house. Sorry,
field house
now. Okay, the Nevada field house. So they said, what, did they tell you they wanted to send 6 people?
She told me that there would be two.
Oh,
I have
good.
Heard that there might be six or seven.
Okay. Yeah. So,
how far out do you guys want me to notify annual and quarterly reports for documentation? Yes, with a written report.
And send them written and plan to come in person if that's your question?
Correct.
Yeah. I'd say until further notice and just, I know some people
want to.
I do monthly, and I've already sent out reminders for April.
Okay, why don't you wait until a couple weeks before May 1st and then send out reminders for May? And unless we've changed anything, they just say they can be submitted in writing and people don't have to come. Is that okay with everybody?
So are you saying that for the month of April that they submit all in writing? Or are you...
She's already sent reminders out for April and asked that they submitted in writing.
Is that correct? Or no, so what you sent out is that you sent out that their reports are due. You just
I have already sent out reminders for April, just for reminders to the annual and quarterly report people. So if you want me to send out an email to those April people that says just report documents, no in-person presentation.
Yes.
And then we
and
can.
And in the middle of April, we can decide whether we're doing it. If things aren't changed much mm-hmm. in terms of improvement, then do the same for the main report.
Yeah.
The April 7th, they could figure out some other way to reach them. I mean, if they could send us some documentation, they could put on the agenda, and then they could take a conference call at the very minimum. If Flores and Mark have something else worked out, that would work fine. But I actually would prefer that they, if you actually have a PowerPoint, you know, they PDF or do whatever they have to do with it, so we just put it on the agenda. Because that way, it's not just people can see it here.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can see it easily.
And it also sets it up if we have any questions. We've got that. Then we can follow up with the agency.
So, all right with everybody?
Yep.
Okay. Upcoming agenda items. Yeah, well, let's
see.
Whatever comes up will be on an agenda.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Public forum number two. Comments from the public on items not on the agenda of the board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Does anybody in the room here have any comments? Seeing nobody, does anybody on the conference call have any comments? And if so, please, if you're on mute, please unmute yourself before comments and say who it is talking. Hearing nobody, I'll close the public forum. Two, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. I think we've been talking about that quite a bit. Is there anything that somebody wants to say that hasn't yet already had a chance?
I just want to let folks know, so MICA, Mid-Iowa Community Action, they have transitioned the majority of their workforce who can to work from home. They are still able to take LIHEAP applications until May 1st, so that was extended. And then the weatherization, dental clinic, and teen outreach are all closed at this time. So that's just an email that I just received. So I wanted everybody to know that. Otherwise, the majority of my meetings this week and next have been canceled. Some of my presentations have been canceled, or they're moved to electronic communications only, telephone or Zoom or GoToMeeting, whatever that entity provides offers to do. The last thing I would say too is next week on the 31st and the 1st for Boost, we do have some interviews that we are doing, and those will be done the electronic means as well. So we'll be doing those. It's
so
in the afternoon.
The Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization is meeting at 6 o'clock tonight via electronics at the beginning of the Ames City Council meeting. and it's very pro forma. We have to approve some yearly things, statements to go back to the federal agencies. What I did catch that was a great idea, so I've added it to my list about as we do meetings, is that they're providing a number so people can go ahead and text in to ask questions. If they don't want to call in, they could participate via text. So that's maybe a possibility we could do going forward. Kurt is still on the road. I will get an update in a couple days on that one. Sorry, I didn't have an update for today about what's going on there. I do have community and family resources. We're going to meet by also electronic means, and I think one of the emphases will be there how counselors are delivering services. Obviously, they've already said as far as like driving for OMVIs, et cetera, that those classes now can go to electronics. So I'll have an update on that.
I had several meetings that were canceled last week in this. Prairie Rivers Board canceled. Second District Department of Corrections Services canceled. And then Milliken, the director, sent out really nice on all the things that they were doing. And they had a lot of challenges that were similar to, I think, what our jail has in operating with the residential facilities. I don't think I have it anymore. I think I actually deleted it to save some space in my inbox or I would send it out to people. But they are working, I think, still from offices. And they have some people working from home, but they are working as a public safety agency to help provide public safety. And everything else seems to be that similar to what the county is doing right now, and they have offices close to the public that they have some people working to provide services. That's really all I have for
One thing I did forget to mention, or just want to reiterate, is that the Board of Health is meeting tonight at 6 p.m. We'll have just the Board of Health personnel that will be in the public meeting room. The public do have the ability to call in and listen for the meeting.
And I did get a text, and we were offline for just a minute when I handed it out to get the music sounds good. Everybody got back on and said, yeah, they were. So this has worked pretty well.
Yeah.
As a way to have a meeting, it's not perfect, but I think it's a really low tech solution for the time being, and we can also use it. We'll be using it for quite a while. I think we can get better at it. So, with nothing else, then I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.